Nobody owns life, but anybody who can pick up a cereal bowl owns death.
I'm Chelsea.
And I'm Ashley. And this is Serial Killers Elite.
You should probably get your shit
together. Ugh, my shit's never together. I don't know what that looks like in life.
Obviously not. It's never been together.
Wait, are you on the first, second, or third one? Are we on our first fucking podcast episode, bitch? Is that what we're in?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so today we are going to be covering Eileen Wuornos. We watched a lovely documentary.
And Ashley deleted.
Oh, do not blame this on me. We had an hour's worth of notes out of the hour and a half that was the length of the entire documentary. And Chelsea decided to refresh the page and delete the entire amount of notes that we had. A little fucking salty about that.
Well, if you would have told me that there was something that I could have used on my tablet, like Word.
Maybe if you weren't so technologically challenged.
Well, I'm sorry.
All right. So back to Eileen Wuornos.
Eileen was born February 29th of 1956. She was considered the first American female serial killer and prostitute. She murdered 7 men in Florida.
Between the years of 1989 and 1990.
Eileen was born in Troy, Michigan on February 29th of 1956. She was born to Carol Pittman. No, that was her middle name.
She was born to her Finnish American mother, Diane Wuornos, who was actually born in 1939.
She was 14 years old when she married Eileen's English American father, Leo Dale Pittman,
who was 16. June
3rd, 1954.
A thing to note for Diane and Dale was that they were heavy drug users. They drank heavily as well, which is in the end why Diane's mother, Eileen's grandmother, ended up petitioning for custody of the kids.
They also did not feed them.
Good job on remembering a random note from our notes you deleted.
You're welcome.
This entire podcast episode is just going to be me being salty with you for deleting an hour's worth of notes. Just so you're aware.
I'm really happy for you right now.
I'm fucking not.
Eileen also had a older brother named Keith. He was born March 14th of 1955. And after 2 years of marriage, 2 months before Eileen was born, Diane filed for divorce. And Eileen never met her father. As he was incarcerated at the time of birth, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. He also had convictions of child molestation, and he eventually committed suicide by hanging himself in prison on January 30th of 1969.
Her grandma and grandpa legally adopted Keith and Eileen on March 18th of 1960.
Eileen was 4, I think.
Yes, she was almost 4.
Yeah.
So she had a pretty rough childhood. Wuornos actually began engaging in sexual activities around the age of 11, which was also the age that she got raped.
She ended up falling pregnant at age 12 with her grandfather's friend, and she ended up having a son. His name was Keith. He was named after her brother, but she actually ended up having to give him up for adoption.
And I'm pretty sure in the documentary they said that she didn't even get to see him or hold him. Like, she was pretty pissed off about that and had a lot of pent-up anger around that subject, which, I mean, who wouldn't, honestly?
She dropped out of school shortly after she gave birth to her son. At the same time, her grandmother died of liver failure.
That was about the time that her grandfather started becoming very alcoholic. I don't know why I said that in such a funny sentence, but like, ayo.
Are you a very alcoholic?
Shut the fuck up. All right, so her grandfather became an alcoholic around the time that her grandfather passed away. He also became very abusive, right?
You just said her grandfather.
You know what?
Very.
It's not my day to day. I've had too much sugar and too much caffeine, not enough sleep, too much children.
She's making fun of my children.
I'm falling apart. Oh, God. Yeah, it is a damn good thing I don't have kids. I am not meant to be a mother. So when she was 15, her grandfather threw her out of the house, and she began supporting herself by prostituting and living in the woods near her old home, which, if you watch the documentary, her best friend, whose name was Dawn. She explains how they used to go out and party in these woods. So Eileen knew them pretty well. And if it was raining or anything like that, she would actually cover herself up with sticks and just find places to hide. And it would get really, really cold at night, but she didn't have any other option. She'd wake up really early to clean herself and get ready to prostitute for the day just so she could survive, whether that was eating, whether that was showering, you know, whatever it took.
Which is really sad.
That is so sad. Like, if that was me, I mean, I like to think of myself as a strong person, but I really honestly, I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could live that lifestyle.
I just think of my 14-year-old daughter.
Like, wow, yeah, that is literally like her having to go through that right now.
Mm-hmm. Like, mentally, I don't think she could. That's just nuts. Like,
and like, how could you as a parent be okay? Yeah, or even a grandparent. Like, I understand that his wife died and he was going through some shit, but how could you be okay letting a freaking 15-year-old kid support herself by prostituting and living out in the woods? Like, that's your own flesh and blood. That's fucked up. Anyways, so when she was 20,
she hitchhiked her way to Florida. She ended up meeting a 69-year-old yacht club president, Louis Gratzfeld. Probably just butchered that name, but that's okay.
You know, tweet us if you know how to pronounce that.
Or if you're anything like me, you don't know how to use Twitter, so.
Yeah, I will be running all of the social media because Chelsea over here is very technologically challenged.
She likes to say that to make herself feel better.
Very true. I'm not arguing that.
Aileen and Louis, they married quickly. And shortly after that, Eileen ended up pushing him down the stairs and beating him with his own cane. He ended up getting a restraining order against her within a few weeks of their marriage. They ended up getting their marriage annulled like within 9 weeks of being married, which is just crazy ridiculous.
That is insane. So when her brother Keith died,
she got money for that.
Yeah.
But she spent it really, really fast.
So her brother actually died on the 17th of July, and Warnos and Fell annulled their marriage on the 21st of July. She did get $10,000 from her brother's life insurance. He did also die of esophageal cancer. She also had prior criminal activity to moving to Florida. In 74, at the age of 18, she was arrested for drunk driving, disorderly conduct, as well as firing a .22-caliber pistol from a moving vehicle. She actually was charged later with a failure to appear at court, and that pistol charge is going to come in later and bite her in the ass. After the death of her brother, in August of 76, she was given a $100 fine for drunk driving. So that is the second charge for drunk driving.
I think she was 18 when she got her first DUI.
Yep. And she spent all of her brother's money, minus the $105 she paid the fine for, on luxuries within 2 freaking months.
I don't know. I would spend some money like that if I could.
$10,000, I'd pay my debt off.
Think about how much $10,000
was then versus now.
That's like nothing now.
Literally, that's like fucking pocket change now. Also, apologize, but don't apologize for my language. This will continue to be a thing. I have the mouth of a sailor.
That makes two of us.
Yeah. So, if you don't like that, move the fuck on. This ain't the podcast for you. Let's see. She had other charges brought against her in 81 for armed robbery. Been a little time in prison for that. Forged checks in 84. Theft of a revolver in 85. Theft, resisting arrest, and obstruction of justice in 86. It was around that time in 86 after her arrest for the car theft and obstruction of justice that she met her lesbian lover, Tyria Moore.
She was
a hot mama, let me tell you. Woo!
What'd
we say?
Turtle trucker motherfucker.
Hey, I really like how you made that rhyme. I really like how you made that rhyme. She was actually a hotel maid. Warnos met Tyria Moore at, I'm just going to say it was a gay bar in Daytona Beach. They moved in together pretty quickly, if I remember correctly. And Warnos actually paid, I believe, all of their bills from prostituting.
Mm-hmm.
Which she had to frequently do because Tyria blew a lot of their money, if not all of their money, on alcohol.
Going to bars, having lavish things.
Warnos was madly in love with Tyria. She wrote her friend Dawn a ton of letters. She has like tubs of letters from Warnos. And in those letters, she states how much she loved Tyria and how she could have shot her, and if she survived, she would go right back to her the next day. And like, she was a love of her life.
Tyria was the first person that she actually felt love for and from.
Yep. She, first person she felt that accepted her. She had rejection almost her entire life up to that point, besides Dawn and Tyria.
And just for Dawn to stick through that whole thing.
That's pretty impressive.
I don't even know if I could be a friend like that.
I mean, to be fair, Dawn knew her before any of this happened. And so I feel like Dawn has kind of an understanding of maybe not like the way she thinks, but also the way she thinks, if that made sense. He probably didn't make any sense at all.
No, it absolutely did not.
Fuck off. So Dawn grew up with her, so she kind of knows what happened to her. She knows a lot more detail about everything in Warnos's life than we do as outsiders.
That's true.
So she probably just understands the process that got her to where she is.
One crazy motherfucker.
That's an understatement. As previously mentioned, she did kill or murder 7 men within a 12-month period. The first murder was Richard Charles Mallory.
He was 5'7". I remember that.
Thank you. A good thing to note is that all of these men were on the taller side. Like, I believe, was it Spears or Carskadon that was 6'4"?
Carskadon, because I never...
You couldn't spell his name, that's...
Yeah.
So Carskadon was 6'4", and Mallory was 5'7".
Both of their cars.
Yep, they kind of knew that whoever was doing the killing actually had to be way shorter than them, because as Chelsea was saying...
Both of their cars, the front seat, was pushed up all the way.
As far as it could go. So, cool fact there. So, Richard Mallory was 51 years old. He was found on December 13th of 1989. He was an electronics store owner in Clearwater, Florida. He was also a convicted rapist. So one of the things that kind of plays into was that Eileen claimed self-defense for almost all of these murders. I guess I shouldn't say almost. She claimed self-defense for all of them. And she claimed that they tried to rape her.
Beat her or something?
Oh, yeah. No, beat or raped her. So she even admits then she shot them in self-defense and also robbed them. Richard Mallory was actually the first case she was condemned on as well. They found his abandoned vehicle on December 2nd, and the body was several miles away in a wooded area. He was shot, I believe they said in the documentary, 3 times. The cause of death was 2 bullets to the left lung. David Spears was her next victim. He was found on June 1st of 1990. He was a construction worker in Winter Garden, Florida. His nude body was found along Highway 19 in Citrus County, Florida. He was shot 6 times.
Charles. They said that one was pure rage.
No, the next one is.
Was it?
Yep.
I thought it was that one.
Nope. Carskadon was 9.
Oh, my bad.
You know, if you hadn't deleted our notes. Okay, so Charles Carskadon was, I am probably butchering these names, so if people know how to pronounce them, please feel free to tweet, Instagram, direct message, whatever, any corrections. Charles Karskadon was 40 years old. He was the third victim and also the one that police felt was the most rage-inducing for Warnos because he was shot 9 times. His body was found in Pasco County, Florida. Peter Sims.
Wait. Back up. Wasn't that the third?
Karskadon? Yeah, I said that.
Okay. They did not link all of the three killings together.
Okay, yeah. So those three murders were all in different counties. The bodies were found in different counties. And so those counties actually did not link together the murders. They were all working on it separately at that time because they did not see the connection. Peter Sims was her fourth murder. He was age 65. His car was found in Orange Springs, Florida, and his body was never actually found. Troy Bress was her fifth murder. He was age 50. He was found on August 4th, 1990. He was a sausage salesman from Ocala, Florida.
Saucy, saucy.
Or sausage, as Chelsea likes to type it out. His body was found in a wooded area along...
You have no proof.
Fuck you. Along State Road 19 in Marion County, he was shot twice. Charles Dick Humphreys was her sixth murder. He was 56 years old and found on September 12th, 1990. He was a retired Air Force major and police chief. His body was found fully clothed in Marion County.
He was also a state child abuse investigator. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah. He was shot 6 times in the head and the torso. Her last victim was Walter Antonio. He was age 60 and was found on November 19th of 1990. He was found nearly nude near a remote logging road in Dixie County. He was shot only 4 times in the back of his head. Now, moving back to Richard Mallory, When Warnos killed Richard, she took a couple things from his car. Camera.
A radar device.
Yep, a police radar device, and then something else, which I can't remember. And she pawned them at a pawn shop, and that is actually how they caught her. Because they somehow got back to the pawn shop and found his stuff while walking through the pawn shop. And when they pulled up the ticket log,
it was under Cami Marsh Green.
Yep. And there was also a fingerprint on the ticket log. So they logged the fingerprint. And back then, their fingerprint system was wicked. They had a person go in and actually manually look through fingerprint files that they had.
They said it was pretty much like the 1 in a million chance of winning the lottery to find the actual fingerprint.
And it only took her 15 minutes of looking before she found the match, which that match was to a white female who was 5'2", and she had a previous warrant out for her, which is the...
Where the weapon comes into play, the 22. Yep,
the weapons charge for a 22 caliber. Every one of her victims was shot with a 22 caliber pistol. She kept this pistol in her purse while she was hooking for safety.
You know, safety and just robbing other people and killing them.
Yeah, something like that. They traced back the name on the
ticket
to the...
Cami Green. Cami Marsh Green.
And Warnos and her lady lover had lived with Green.
For about 3 months.
Yeah. 3-ish months, give or take. And when they left, they actually stole her ID. Like, her ID card.
They had it for like five years, I think.
For 5 years, they had her ID and she lost it. But she never put two and two together until the police came knocking on her door like, hey, have you been to
the pawn shop?
A pawn shop recently. And she's like, I haven't been to one in years. And then she put two and two together once everything started with the trials. So once they figured out who Eileen was,
they found her at the Last Resort bar.
And it. OK, so they sent in Mike Joyner to do like an undercover operation to see if they could get a confession out of her without arresting her first. But Joyner had pretty much convinced her to leave with him, and the arresting officers that were outside in the undercover car weren't comfortable with him getting into a car with her and like knowing they could keep him safe. So they arrested her on the spot and along with him so that it looked good.
And in the documentary, it shows that happening. And yeah, like, he played it off really well.
He
like,
really did.
Freaking out and asking why he's being arrested.
That was like super cool. Mm-hmm. He did a really good job with that.
So once Warnos is arrested, they aren't really getting anything out of her. And they decide, actually back that up.
She was arrested on January 9th of 1991.
Thank you. Was it David Spears? Or no, it was Peter Sims' truck that they had a witness on, wasn't it? Because they never found his body, but I'm pretty sure it was Peter Sims, because she said she saw both of them, Moore and Warnos,
driving through the bushes.
Well, they were driving down the road, lost control of the truck, and it went into the like forested area off the road. And Warnos had a like huge gash on her arm. She was losing a lot of blood and about to pass out. And they ended up like, you know, trying to tell this lady, you know, everything's fine. Like, we just live a little ways away so that they could get away and not have too many questions. That's how they got the police composite sketch that they used. And once they found Warnos, obviously they found Moore, and the police decided that it was better. They were better off using Moore as like a prosecution witness rather than trying to charge her. So Mike Joyner actually sat in a
motel room
with Moore, and Warnos had a couple collect calls that she made from jail, or that she was allowed to make. She made them to Moore at this motel room, and Mike Joyner sat with her
and cued her with like what to ask or say
to get a confession out of Warner. It did work. And basically in the documentary, it shows some of the dialogue. Well, I guess not really shows. You can hear some of the dialogue from the actual phone calls, which is really cool. And in the interview, once Warner agrees to give her confession, she states that she felt that she was coerced into it.
Warnos was convicted of Mallory's murder on January 27th of 1992 with the help of Moore's testimony. At her sentencing, psychiatrists for the defense testified that Warnos was mentally unstable and had been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and antisocial personality disorder. And then 4 days after that, she was sentenced to death. On June 1992, Warnos pleaded guilty to the murder of Carcidon. I have no fucking idea how to pronounce that.
So, fun fact. January 31st, 1992, a jury recommended death 12-0 for Richard Mallory. On May 15th, 1992, a jury recommended death 10-2 for Dick Humphrey's murder, David Spears' murder, and Troy Burress's murder. February 4th of 93, a jury recommended death 7-5 for Walter Antonio's murder. And on February 5th of 93, penalty trial waived, and she was sentenced to death by the judge for Charles Carcidon's murder. The only murder that she committed, that she admits to committing, that she didn't get charged for, was Peter Sims, as they couldn't find the body.
She was convicted and sentenced to death 6 times. Can you imagine how long?
It was actually, I believe, 225 years total.
Damn. You're lucky you don't fucking live that long.
Right? Well, I mean, she was gonna die anyways.
Right.
Not to be insensitive there, but I actually am really sad we didn't finish the documentary. I mean, I've watched it twice. That was my third time. But I really wanted you to see the end because...
Did it show her?
Yeah. Okay. It showed her, like, not really getting sentenced, but it did show a lot of her reactions to things, which, I mean, she flips off the handle. But I do find it crazy that... The judge says something to her after she gets sentenced, and he says the same thing to almost everybody who gets sentenced. It's just, like, something the judges say. But they normally say, like, may God rest your soul or something like that. Something along those lines. And he actually said corpse. Or maybe it wasn't corpse. It was like something that implied she didn't have a soul. I swear to God he said corpse. I don't
think she did have a soul though.
But I do find it really crazy that she was sentenced to death and so many worse people haven't been.
I feel that when there is someone that has gone around and killed multiple people, innocent people, they should be sentenced to death. If we're paying for them to sit and rot in prison, why not just, but just kill them off?
Well, and, like, I agree with that. Like, I'm all for the death penalty. But at the same time, like, I also get people's outlook on the fact that, like, death is too easy for them. You know what I mean? Like, it's too quick. Like, they put so many people through so much shit. Like, killing them right away doesn't serve justice to anyone. Like, should have to suffer. A cool fact, though, is that another video that I watched brought up is that so often we see a lot of other serial killers tend to go after prostitutes because they're such an easy target. They're putting themselves in vulnerable situations. And Eileen flipped the script. She was in vulnerable situations, but turned that around on the men and basically made them her victims. Which is not to, like, praise a serial killer, but kinda cool. But yeah, that is pretty much everything there is on Eileen. Her execution was on October 9th, 2002. She did end up choosing lethal injection. In her last statement, Warnos said,
"I'd just like to say I'm sailing with the rock and I'll be back like Independence Day with Jesus, June 6th, like this movie, Big Mother Ship and all. I'll be back."
She was pronounced dead at 9:47 a.m., She was the 10th woman to be executed in the United States since 1976. And, like I said, the second woman ever executed in Florida.
And that, my friends, is a motherfucking wrap.